Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Alice Plug Buist from Helping Hands Street Mission. So tell me a little bit about the mission's work concerning persons with disabilities.
Sure. So Helping Hands Street Mission is an organization that, as our mission, we reach out one hand at a time with love and respect. And so that does mean to everybody. We don't turn anybody away. So our mission is to anybody who is dealing with either dealing with homelessness or dealing with other kinds of or other issues of social, physical, or spiritual as well, poverty. In our situation, we're finding that a lot of those people are people who are dealing with different kinds of disabilities. So we offer a free social space where people can just come in and relax and have a cup of coffee and just enjoy each other's company. It's kind of a community engagement space. They enjoy each other's company. Also, the staff and the volunteers spend a lot of time just engaging with people and befriending each other. So that's our main goal, to really befriend each other so that the lonely all can say they have a friend. And then we also have a storefront, which is where we in a respectful way as possible, we give out free clothing and blankets, sleeping bags, towels, personal hygiene items, things like that, and everybody is welcome in there as well. And again, we do see a lot of people that are dealing with various kinds of disabilities, whether they're obvious ones or hidden ones, because we're finding that a lot of people that are on ODSP, the Ontario Disability, are not receiving enough funds to make ends meet. So a lot of our people, we don't track really which people have disabilities and which don't, because we treat each person equal to ourselves, equal to each other. So we don't track who all has disabilities, but we definitely do see a lot of people who are dealing with very difficult things.
So I'd imagine things like addiction and mental health issues do come up in the work you do.
Definitely. I would say that, I mean, we all have mental health concerns of different kinds. I would say that's kind of an across-the-board thing for all of us. But definitely a lot of people who are more on the margins are dealing with mental health concerns to a greater extent and have less of a support community than the rest of us to be able to deal with those things and flourish within that.
So are there any myths you encounter about people living on the margins and what they're capable of, why they ended up there?
Yeah, definitely. At our mission, it's very important that we treat each person we're a Christian mission, so we treat each person as made in the image of God. But across the board, that would mean for everybody, whether you're a person of faith or not, that would mean that we're all equal. There's nothing different about or less worthy, I would say, about each other. That doesn't mean there's nothing different, but differences are to be celebrated. We do find that myths such as these people should be trying harder, these people are lazy, they should just pull up their bootstraps and get over whatever mental health concerns seem to be bothering them. Myths like, oh, I know a person who deals with this, but he's doing okay or she's doing okay. Things like that are definitely ones that we deal with kind of on a community level, but then also you see that coming down even from governmental levels, such as the unfortunate comments that have been made recently from leadership, government leadership, about people on ODSP who should just be finding a job to make things work. Really not understanding the struggles that people with disabilities face on a day-to-day basis. Many of them would love to have a job. Many of them would love to be contributing in kind of the expected way to society, but they're not able to. And so we try to encourage them to see that they do still contribute, perhaps not in the way that's valued by the larger society, but their contributions such as friendship and care for each other, care for others, thoughtfulness, even any of those things are still considered valuable contributions to community. So we try to let people see that you know, despite what other people are saying and thinking, they are worth it as well and are important parts of our community.
So in this way, has there been a success story in which you were able to help a person with a disability see this?
Yeah, I would say we currently have one friend who's dealing with a lot of hidden disabilities, and he's being constantly told by different people, even by doctors, that the disabilities that he's dealing with are not valid and not even or not ones that we have things that we can do about. So he needs to just get over it and get moving with his life. So that does mean for him that he has a lot of trouble. He does, his mom, or he's inherited a home from his mom, so he does own a home, but he's in danger daily of the city coming down on him for not keeping his home up very well, but he's just struggling just to open his envelopes, his bills that come in the mail. He struggles daily just with, you know, the fear of, you know, retribution by neighbors who call a bylaw on him, doctors who are refusing to listen to him. So we've been able to, just by befriending him, we've been able to encourage him that we believe in him, that we understand that he's dealing with hard things, and then we don't do things necessarily for him, but we do things with him. So together with him, we wrote a letter to bylaw and were able to help set up a timeline for him to clean up his property in a way that matched with their desires and expectations. And it was really wonderful that they happily then said, okay, if he can stick with those timelines, then we're happy to work with him, which really encouraged him. And then we were also able to, together with him, make a few phone calls, do some online research for other kinds of support systems. So he now has somebody who, not from our organization, but somebody that we help to connect him with, who opens his mail together with him and helps him to get over some of the PTSD concerns that he has as well. So even though his life is still hard, it's not like, you know, it's a fairy tale story of everything is better. but he definitely comes in smiling, knows that we're there for him, that we are his friends, we're behind him, and that we believe in him.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Tiana Rodrigo from Friends of We Care. So tell me a little bit about Friends of We Care.
So Friends of We Care is the food service and hospitality industry's charity of choice. We raise money to send kids with disabilities to Easter Seals accessible camps. So we're currently focused on support from the food service industry. And we're unique in that sense, I guess, because there's a lot of food service industry companies that have their own charitable endeavors and foundations, like Ronald McDonald's House, Tim Hortons has their camps, but not one, except for ours, kind of unites the entire industry towards one common goal. And we raised about, prior to this year, last year we donated $1.4 million, and all that money supports the accessible camping program. So it costs $250 a day to send a kid to camp. These are very specialized camps. They're fully accessible. Kids there can do absolutely anything, regardless of their abilities. So they're very unique, and obviously it's a little bit more expensive to run those types of facilities. And the attention for those kids with sometimes a one-on-one ratio. So these kids have to be bathed, they're fed, depending on the severity of their disability. So obviously the cost is much higher.
So what was the inspiration behind getting involved with partnering with the disabilities charity to make this happen?
It was something that the founder had initiated. So this organization's been around since 1983. A guy by the name of Gary Wright was the founder, and he had a son with a disability. So his initiation of the organization was really to help his child experience things that every other child would get to experience. So that's kind of how it started, and that's why it started in the food service industry, because he was a member of that industry. And I guess that's why it focused on kids with disabilities.
So how do you spread the word about the work you do?
It's an interesting question. We're not really public facing, because most of the people, so we raise money in two ways. One is through a membership program. Companies pay a membership fee to be a part of our organization. And then the second way is to run fundraising initiatives. So we have about 15 internal events and dozens of third-party events. So those events are mostly attended by and supported by members of the food service industry, and it's more corporate dollars. So companies will sign up a team to participate in a bowling event, or we'll purchase a foursome to come out and golf for the day. So we don't really go to the public for much, and that's kind of a bit unique about us. Obviously, with COVID, we've had to pivot that a lot. The food service industry has been one of the hardest hits, with a lot of restaurants being shut down for so many months. So we knew that we couldn't, we kind of felt bad even asking for money to companies that have generally supported us, because they were cutting back on budgets. They're losing, probably millions of dollars. So we've pivoted in a way that, what can we make that is affordable and targets more of the individual dollar rather than the corporate dollar? So we've had to change a little bit from that perspective.
And have these efforts proven successful thus far in terms of adapting to the world's situation?
Yes and no. So because we're usually so successful and we're able to run so many events, obviously this year has been very hard for the organization as well. We faced 70%+ loss in revenue. So I would say no from that perspective, because most of, one being the corporate dollars, and two being that we really focus on providing events that offer great networking opportunities. And I think that's one of the biggest pull factors that we have for companies to participate, is that you can golf side by side with someone else that you're wanting to do business with. So it's a little bit of a a business opportunity there. But on the other side, I mean, we had to obviously have our in-person gala, but we decided to try a virtual gala. And we were really surprised by the take-up on that. We were, you know, doing $10 donations will get you a ticket into a draw, and we made $30,000 on that. So we were really surprised by the amount of people who participate. But again, keeping the buy-in at only $10, we knew that that was affordable and accessible to everyone. We've got our first in-person event tomorrow, which we're really excited about. It's a drive-in, pop-up drive-in theater. So that's also had a good take-up. And we've gotten some sponsorship for that as well. So people have been very supportive, but we're also very cognizant of, you know, where our support base lies and trying to give them a break, because we know, you know, they're suffering a lot as well.
So in your time with the organization, what's been the greatest success you've witnessed?
That's a very good question. I mean, I guess it depends how you judge success. I think for us as an organization, we sometimes find it difficult to grow on the membership side, for example, because companies, especially in this industry, tend to always be downsizing, whether it's internal downsizing or American acquisitions. So, for example, Kraft and Heinz used to both be member sponsors. Now they're one company, so now they have turned into one member sponsor. So we've lost the revenue from, you know, a secondary member sponsor because they're now the same company. Same with like budget cuts and everything. Obviously, charitable dollars are some of the first things to go when you're trying to cut back on expenses. So that's definitely been a struggle for us. And I would say that the biggest accomplishment as an organization is just trying to, we've continuously upped how many dollars we can donate at the end of the year. So despite facing all of those challenges in the industry, we've been able to continuously grow the amount of funding that we can provide with a very small team. I mean, we're usually 4 full-time staff, so we're a very efficient team, and we've been able to continuously grow.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No problem.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
If you made a compensation claim for abuse at an Indian residential school, the records of your claim are secure. They will be destroyed in September 2027, unless you choose to keep them or share them. To learn more, call toll-free 1-877-635-2648 or go to myrecordsmychoice.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Alice Plug Buist from Helping Hands Street Mission and from Tiana Rodrigo from Friends of We Care.
In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Sean Marsalis from Blind Beginnings.
So tell me a little bit about your experiences with Blind Beginnings.
Okay, I started Blind Beginnings in 2008. I grew up with a visual impairment and felt that my family didn't have a lot of support kind of coping with the fact that their daughter was blind. And so that was the main motivation for starting the organization, and just really felt that there needed to be an organization specifically for children and youth who are blind or partially sighted in British Columbia.
So can you tell me a little bit about the programs and services you offer?
Yeah, normally before COVID, we offered things like summer camp programs, workshops for parents, workshops for children, creating confidence workshops where we're teaching social skills, a youth leadership and pre-employment program. So a wide range, counseling, support, you know, so lots of hands-on experiential learning, community discovery outings into the community where kids would get hands-on experiences and learn concepts about their world and their community. Now everything's virtual, so we're trying to recreate programming in an online format, which obviously has its challenges, but for the most part is working out okay.
So when you mention you offer sort of counseling in regards to visual impairments, would that include things like the mental health aspect of it, like how to deal with an acquired one and how to...
Yes. So most of the children and youth that we work with probably have been visually impaired since birth or very young age, but some of the kids are acquiring a visual impairment at some point during their childhood or adolescence. So, and often the counseling is for the parent who is coming to terms with the fact that their child has a visual impairment. But yeah, it works both ways. Sometimes kids that are born blind don't actually feel, you know, they're not struggling with that emotionally until they kind of reach adolescence. And now they really are knowing and understanding that they're different and maybe they're being treated as different in their school or whatever. So often they need some support around that.
So are there any myths out there concerning visual impairments you'd like to clear up?
I think there's sort of an overall misconception that if you're blind, you're helpless or incapable, and that's definitely not true. So Blind Beginnings has a no limits philosophy, and what that means is we all have limits regardless of ability or vision. But when you have disability, people often decide your limits for you, and I think in many cases they're usually wrong. What they think is a limit maybe isn't a limit. So I guess it's just I wish that people would not assume we can't, because usually we can, and we just maybe have to figure out a different way to do it.
So in your time with Blind Beginnings, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
I mean, many success moments, but I guess the biggest one was probably 3 years ago, a group of 9 youth who are blind or partially sighted and myself climbed the Grouse Grind, which is a fairly big hike in Vancouver. It's a pretty challenging hike. You're kind of going up the side of a mountain, and it's lots of different size steps and varied terrain, and can be quite challenging. And so we trained for this and then did it as a group. And actually, Accessible Media did a documentary called Do the Grind Blind, of the whole sort of process. But I think, you know, as we were going up the side of Grouse Mountain, people were passing us and saying good job. And I think we were impressing people with our abilities, because many people who are sighted think that, you know, just being able to cross the street without your vision would be impossible. So to see us hiking up the side of this crazy mountain was very eye-opening, I guess. So that stands out for me as a really important moment in Blind Beginnings history.
So can you tell me a little bit about how you went about training for this mountain climb?
Yeah, so for 4 months beforehand, each month we planned a different hike. So the first hike was just a flat 10-kilometer loop around a lake. And really the goal was endurance. And it was like, if you're going to struggle with doing a 10K walk, basically, then you've got some serious work to do in order to be able to do the Grouse Grind. And then the next month we did the Coquitlam Crunch, which is a series of steps up the side of the mountain, but only about a quarter of the distance, maybe less than a quarter of the distance of the Gross Grind. So again, getting used to kind of going upstairs. And then the next two hikes were just equal, you know, every time was a little bit more challenging and introducing a different aspect of what the grind was going to entail. So that as they went along, they were kind of getting different pieces of it. Because how do you teach someone who's never seen, you know, to prepare for something that they've never seen? So this was kind of the way we went about it. And I think it worked fairly well. And for each of the hikes, we paired the youth with a sighted volunteer who was guiding. And so the hope was that each month they would train with that same person so that they would establish a communication and, you know, get to know each other and understand kind of, yeah, develop their own communication strategy in order to get up that Gross Grind.
So did you use any modified equipment of any kind in the climb itself?
No, we had hiking poles for anybody who wanted them. I myself feel like I use a hiking pole instead of my white cane, and we actually painted the hiking poles white with red on the bottom to sort of look like a white cane. But that was the only real equipment. But, you know, it does, you can sort of use the hiking pole to feel the step in front of you and then also, you know, lean on it a little bit as you're stepping up, which is kind of helpful. And then we had t-shirts that said "Do the Grind Blind" because we wanted the public to understand that we were blind. And if we didn't have our white canes, how would they know that? Because we might be slowing their progress, right? It's a narrow trail and people have to get past us. And if we're going slowly, we wanted them to understand why. But I mean, some of our group got up there in pretty much the same speed that a sighted person would.
So if you could send any message to the community about just getting beyond the myths of visual impairments and the fact of equal capability, what would you say?
I guess see the person first. I think when people see the white cane or the guide dog, they instantly make some assumptions about what that means. We're all different, and we are very capable. And I don't know, I guess just open your mind to how could we possibly be doing things, you know, because we are. So be curious, I guess. For me personally, I don't mind questions. I would rather people ask questions than assume. But assume competence and capability, because generally I would say, you know, just because we can't see doesn't mean that we can't do.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
My friends, ever giving in to the myth of someone being helpless is always a dangerous assumption. But the fact is, people are as much a product of what they are physically as they are what they're conditioned to be. If you tell a person all their life the things they can't do, then they'll grow up and they'll think, I'm just incapable of doing it. It becomes a matter of rationalizing it. But conversely, if you choose to tell a person they're worthy, they're capable, encourage them to explore, chances are they'll rise to the occasion. They'll find a way. But the truth is, most disabilities are never as hopeless as they might seem on the surface. Medical science may say you have a 1% chance of surviving this thing, but the person survives anyway and thrives. Well, what does that say about the individual's strength? What does that say about the people who love them, the people who support them? It says there's something about the whole situation that goes deeper than just the physical circumstance. It's also a matter of belief and of love and support. If you are surrounded by those who tell you you can achieve, you may just find you surprise yourself, even. Now, it's a matter of what you want to accomplish in this life, of course. Everyone's unique in that. But Never assume it's impossible. Never assume anyone's helpless. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.